This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, let's have a little fun with Josh here for a second. Josh, do you know the song that you're playing?
Truth be told, not really.
Okay, the song is called The Ocean.
I know that much.
It was released in 1973.
Woo!
Are you aware of it being sampled in a somewhat prominent rap song?
I'll say I might. It doesn't come to the top of my head right now, though.
So, from the License to Ill album, the Beastie Boys use this song in the song She's Crafty.
Okay. I could hear that now.
So now you'll have to get She's Crafty. And at some point you'll have to get up the Vinnie Mac entrance song because I don't know that Steve found it. And you know, well, like I said, we gotta make sure we educate the peoples. Gotta make sure the peoples have the right info.
Public responsibility.
It
absolutely.
Is. You know what? See, in real broadcasting, you have a responsibility to the public to provide proper information in a timely manner. Not alternative information, but actual, legitimate, proven, document information. Now, we will get into some Astros spring training here. And look, there's a couple of battles going on. Not very many. There's a couple of battles going on in Astros training camp. One of them will result in somebody being the official center fielder, maybe. And one of them will result in maybe somebody making the team and somebody not. We'll start in center field, where Jazzy Fizz, the incumbent, Jake Myers, the challenger, battling for the center field job. Here's Chaz McCormick talking about his off season.
It was amazing. I'm just happy. I'm happy we were able to win. You know, losing in 2021 stunk, obviously, and be able to go back there the next year, and being able to contribute, being able to play, being able to win, felt really good. In my hometown, off season was a little weird. You know, got a couple rude looks my way, but you know, other than that, it was pretty special.
Now, you heard him say, you know, his hometown, because for those of you who don't know, Chaz is a Pennsylvania boy. He is from West Chester, Pennsylvania. That's two words. West Chester, Pennsylvania. That is PSAC conference territory. PSAC is a Division II, very good Division II conference. He did not go to West Chester University, though. He went to Millersville, not Slippery Rock, not Cal PA, not West Chester, but Millersville. And, pretty much everybody in his family, not Astros fans. So a lot of people in his hometown, not Astros fans. Giving him the stink eye. Because he made sure the team from their state took a big fat L. And good for you, Jazzy Fizz. We love you here in Houston. Now, Jake Myers, who was brought up at the trade deadline, 2021, after they traded Miles Straw to get Phil Maton and some guy named Yiner Diaz, Jake Myers was tearing the cover off the ball, hitting over 340 at AAA, and earned himself a call-up. Took him a little while to get some regular playing time. When he did hit well, became the regular center fielder into the postseason, tried climbing the wall, and tore his labrum. Got rushed back when he wasn't ready, didn't play so well over the summer. Went back down to AAA, hit really well for a month. They brought him back up to the big league team with 5 days left in the regular season, and Jake Meyerson 5-for-11. We know the organization thinks of Myers as a better fielder. Back in 2021, Jake Meyers was basically voted the top defensive outfielder in the Astros minor league system. Had a big arm, covered a lot of ground, a lot of speed. They consider his hit tool and his power tool to be better than McCormick. Chaz was a corner outfielder converted into a center fielder. Myers is a center fielder. Here's Jake Meyers talking about having to overcome the adversity of last season.
So no limitations. What do you expect from yourself?
It's a great question. I expect to be the best I can this year. Better than past years, because really my goal is to get better every day. And I think this offseason, I did that each day. I felt like I got better, and I feel like I'm in a really good spot now.
How frustrating has this been when it seemed like you've got your feet under you and the injury sort of kind of derailed it for a little while?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely frustrating. It was tough to go through, but I learned a lot from it, and I think it'll end up being one of my most important years going forward in my career.
What has the team said to you about their hopes, expectations, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, the expectation is to come out and be ready to go, help the team win. Just very simple things that I think I can do. If I just come out and do what I can, just help the team win.
How much does it help you that when you were healthy, the things you were able to do, now you're back healthy again, trying to replicate that success?
Sorry, repeat the question.
How much did it help your experience when you were healthy, the success you had? Now you're back healthy. How much did it help you as you try to replicate that success?
I mean, it's huge. Any experience you can get, especially at the big league level, can help you in some way, whether it's success or failure. And I think I've had a little bit of both in the last 2 years or so. So I've learned a lot, and I just feel grateful that I get the experience to go out and use that, some of that experience.
So that's Jake Meyers. He knows part of last year was a learning experience for him. First time he'd suffered a real serious injury. Trying to rush back, not knowing it's okay to say, you know what, I don't feel right. And then there's the question of, how real a competition is this? If a guy like Chaz McCormick, who meant as much to your franchise last year as he did, and makes that unbelievable catch in the postseason, has he earned himself a little something? Or, are we just straight going to New England Patriot this? And, well, that was then, this is now. Because you would think Chaz has kind of earned a little role. But if Meyers can play the way they think Meyers can play and give you the kind of production that he had at Sugarland, that's an all-star player. That's a guy who is a legitimate all-star center fielder in a league where they're not a whole lot of those. I think the team thinks Meyers has better tools, but Chaz has shown you at the major league level he can do it. Chaz OPS last year was 110. That meant he was 10% better than league average OPS was. That's your eight hitter who's 10% better than league average. Going to go out on a limb and say less than five teams had an eight hitter whose OPS was 10% above league average or better. Just go down on a limb there. Not looking it up. Feel pretty damn confident in saying that less than five teams had an eight hitter with an OPS plus of 110 or better. If Jake Meyers doesn't grossly outplay Chaz McCormick, he shouldn't be able to win the job outright. He could earn himself a share. But in order to win the job outright, I think Chaz has to be really bad and Jake has to be lights out. That being said, if we're going to peel the onion back and be realistic about this, we don't know if Uncle Mike's going to be ready for opening day. I think the Astros hope his swing will be ready for opening day, even though his arm may not be. He might be ready to play the field, but they'll hope he's ready to hit. As of right now, we don't know if Yordan Alvarez is going to be ready for opening day. As of right now, all we know is that he's got discomfort. Got to use the proper Astros terminology. Got to use the proper Astros terminology. Discomfort in his hand, which, of course, he had last year. And you would have thought they would have addressed that, quote, discomfort in the offseason. However, for some reason, they did not. Now they will have to manage it all season instead of just for the last 2 months. Which means, well, Uncle Mike probably not ready to play the field first month of the season. Yordan Alvarez maybe not ready to play the field or ready to play the field that much first month of the season. We could see a decent amount of games of Jake Myers in center and Chaz McCormick in left. And whichever guy is feeling better between Yordan and Uncle Mike in the DH spot. It could look like that early in the season. And it's okay, because early in the season, the Astros, very first week, they're off on Friday. After that, they're off on Thursday. The rest of April, they're off on Thursday the entire month of May. Thursday is designated day off. Like I said earlier today, when I was in for Paul, if your local restaurant does steak night on Thursday night and, you know, your significant other doesn't really like baseball or doesn't care to watch the baseball game, just wants to go out and have steak night, you are off the hook. You can now go have steak night and not worry about missing one single pitch on Thursday nights because there won't be one. Designated day off. Go out for dinner, go shopping, see a movie, go to the museum, go to the arboretum, go to the aquarium, head down to, you know, Moody Gardens after work, whatever. You could do whatever it is. You are off the hook. Thursday night can be date night, and you don't have to worry about missing a thing. Unless, of course, your significant other is a hardcore Astros fan, in which case it's always date night, but just this particular time it's not the Astros. And the both of you will probably go out to dinner and lament the fact that there's no Astros game on. And if that is you, I feel your pain. I do. I feel your pain. Now, there is another battle going on in Astros spring training. And this one has a little bit more significant consequence. Did Dusty tip his hand? Next.
ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, I'm going to have a little bit of fun with Josh again, and then we're going to give away some tickets. Do you know this song?
No.
Okay. Song is called Do Ya by ELO, Electric Light Orchestra. Have you ever heard of Electric Light Orchestra or ELO?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you know who the primary mover is on ELO, the primary person is of the band?
No.
Okay, so Jeff Lynn is basically the driving force behind ELO. This song was released in 1972.
Oh, I'm picking them tonight, huh?
Well, the having worked in rock radio, I know all these stupid facts about songs because it was my job to learn them. But I always liked ELO because they were a different type of band. You know, they're out here using, you know, string instruments and woodwinds and things like that. And I was always interested in the bands who used brass and woods and strings and non-traditional rock instruments into their music. AC/DC has a song, It's a Long Way to the Top, if you want to rock and roll. And these bagpipes. Freaking awesome. Freaking bagpipes. They have dueling bagpipes between the bagpipes and the guitar. So it's really cool. It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. Which they don't they don't really play that song in concert. And have it since Brian Johnson took over as lead singer.
Really? Is there a reason why?
After Bon Scott tragically died, Brian Johnson was kind of the idea that performing a song that basically celebrates the debauchery of a rock and roll band was, like, inappropriate because it cost them their first lead singer. So they don't perform the song live anymore and really haven't for almost 40 years.
Okay, that makes sense.
But it's a great song. All right, let's give away another 4-pack of tickets for your Houston Roughnecks taking on the Arlington Renegades Sunday night at 6 o'clock here at TDECU Stadium. Caller number 3. Caller 3, 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. Caller number 3. You get a 4-pack of tickets for the Roughnecks, the Renegades, Sunday night at 6 o'clock. So we'll get another winner, get some more people out to the game. Look, there really isn't a bad seat in the house. If we're going to be like TDECU it's a cozy stadium. There really aren't any bad seats. And it's a great place to watch a game. Unless, of course, it's pouring. And there's not a lot of outdoor stadiums that are a great place to watch a game if it's pouring. That's just kind of how that goes. But so for the Astros, there's a battle to be the backup catcher between Yainer Diaz and Corley. And Yainer Diaz has shot through the Astros minor league system because he's raked everywhere. Last season, he started the year at Double A Corpus, hit .316. 9 homers in 244 at-bats with an .871 OPS, got called up to AAA. Sugarland, in 201 at-bats, had 16 homers, hit .294, 930 OPS. Finished the year with 25 homers, and that's after hitting 17 homers the year before. His power is very real. He does an excellent job of covering the entire strike zone. Yainer Diaz can hit. Probably Yainer Diaz is hitting is his best position. He is a catcher. He's not a great catcher defensively, but he's okay. He could use some work pitch framing, and he can use some work blocking pitches. He's got a good arm, but he is not considered the smooth defensive player that Corey Lee is. Now, Corey Lee, once upon a time, was a high contact, high on base type hitter, but that all changed really about halfway through 2021. When Corley got to Double A, and all of a sudden he was sacrificing contact for power. That trend continued at AAA last year, where in 404 at-bats, Corey Lee had 25 homers, but he also had 238. With a 307 on base and a 790 OPS. OPS is high because of the power, but he had 238, a 307 on base. Yadier Diaz last season hit 306 with 356 on base. That is a big, big difference in offense. Corey Lee is considered a much more polished defensive player, an excellent receiver with a cannon arm. One of these guys is going to be the backup to Martin Maldonado. The other is probably going back to Sugar Land. Now, one of the things that is of interest is that Martin Maldonado will soon be leaving the Astros for the World Baseball Classic. So as Maldonado plays in the WBC, there'll be lots of Grapefruit League at-bats for both Lee and Diaz. One guy, the better hitter, needing to improve defensively. One guy, the better defender, needing to improve offensively. Well, Dusty Baker said, the number one job of a catcher is to catch, call a game, and hopefully throw some guys out, stop their running game. Defense is number one at the catcher position. Hitting is a bonus big time. There aren't many guys around like Pudge Rodriguez or Johnny Bench. Whoever is catching is my on-field general. He's second in command behind me. Number one, you have to catch. He may as well have just said Corey Lee's got the job. Because unless Yainer Diaz, in his very limited time in winter ball, suddenly improved defensively 900%. Dusty's going to say, I need the defense, even though he has Martin Maldonado. He's going to say, I need the defense, and Corey Lee is going to give him the defense. Corey Lee's bat might not be ready, but his glove is. That means Yadier Diaz could very possibly be headed back to Sugar Land despite having a Major League-ready bat. Unless a Michael Brantley or a Yordan Alvarez is unable to start the season. If there is a bat that winds up on IL to start the year, Yainer Diaz could be up and Yainer Diaz could get some DH at-bats. He could potentially get some an occasional at-bat at first base, but his first base time in the minors was more about getting his bat in the lineup than it is that he's a good first baseman. That Yainer Diaz's best position is DH. But if you have a catcher that can hit the way Yainer Diaz does, most teams are usually willing to sacrifice a little bit of defense to have a guy who can hit for power, hit for average, get on base, and be another big-time bat in the lineup. So, battle to watch, based on what Dusty comments were, you have to figure Corey Lee is well ahead right off the bat because of his perceived advantage defensively. Even though the Astros already have some guy named Martin Maldonado who they love for his defense, you'd think, all right, well, you know what? If our starting catcher is an excellent defender, maybe our backup catcher gives us a little offense. Not this year. Not this coach, not this manager, not this time. But absolutely is something worth watching. All right, coming up next, we need to make sure we are not living in fantasy land. Next.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Now I know you know who Guns N' Roses is.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So, fun thing about this song and this album. This album came out in 1987. Song wasn't released as a single until January 1989. It is the only song on the album that has a synthesizer.
That's quite the pair of interesting facts, I will say that.
Oh, I'm loaded with useless information. I mean, that was part of what I had to do when I worked there, was I had to do all the research on this stuff for them to do their, for the primary jocks to have their notes and to do their contests and stuff like that. I actually got my first shot on air because somebody just didn't show up to work. So, early in the morning on weekends, we used to do what were called beach reports. So, you know, being on Long Island, beaches are everywhere. Do a beach report. Let people know early in the morning what beaches are open, what ones are closed, where you have surf, where you have swimming and don't have swimming because lifeguards will be on it, certain fields and not all the other fields. How high the waves are at X, at Y. And that's it's like a 90-second report. And we did them every 20 minutes. So one person had to collect the data, and another person would read the data. So the person who's supposed to be the on-air person never shows up. I called program director like 10 minutes of, and I'm like, there's nobody here. He's like, well, did you write everything up? I said, yeah. He says, good, you're reading it. I'm like, what? He's like, if nobody's there, you're on. You know how to do it, right? I said, yeah. He's like, he says, I'm going to give you the best advice anybody's ever going to give you. Don't F up. That's what he said. Don't F up. He didn't say F. He said something, but I can't say it. Don't F up. That was the first time I was ever on air. Read beach reports.
That's a legendary story if you ask me.
Read beach reports. Hey, the waves on West End are 8 feet high. Parking lot at, Jones Beach Field 6 is full. Robert Moses has 4-foot waves and lots of swimming. Yeah, I remember doing beach reports. But that was how I got on air the first time. And eventually, I got some on-air shifts, and I was doing some late-night rock radio, and I was doing some weekend rock radio. That was how I got started on air, and I didn't have to do promotions anymore. You're part of the promo team, and every time we did a remote, you were going out there. We had roll banner. We roll bannered everything. You know, like here when we do a remote, you'll see like one little square. It says ESPN 97.5. We used to have that all over everywhere. Like, we would probably have 300 feet of roll banner just taped up everywhere. If there was a fence along the side of the whole fence, if there was something in the front, the whole front. As soon as you walked in, the whole wall. Like, it was everywhere. And then, as it was over, we'd cut them into pieces and give them to people to take home. And people would go home with their roll banner. Like, look, I got a banner! Because, you know. Generally, at remotes, people were imbibing many adult beverages. The sobriety of said people was low. Now, let's have a very hard and real conversation, Houston fans, regarding your basketball team. And no, I don't mean the one that's ranked number one. I mean the other basketball team. The rumors, the narratives, the speculation regarding a reunion between the Houston Rockets and James Harden. Here is James Harden sacrificing the body, diving for a loose ball into a pile of bodies, winning the battle, and tipping the ball to Joel Embiid for the flush.
No! Loose! Diving! Collision! Harden! Embiid! Oh!
Now, I love Kevin Harlan, so I am not going to make jokes about him sounding like he's the proctologist. But that play, I saw that play tweeted and retweeted and retweeted and retweeted with people saying, man, could you imagine getting this Harden back to the Rockets? This engaged Harden, this Harden diving for balls and hustling and taking care of his teammates. Could you? They'd be crazy not to bring this guy back. You're right. They would be crazy not to bring back a James Harden who's diving for loose balls and putting his teammates first and a true team player and accepts being coached and is out there giving max effort. They'd be crazy not to bring that guy back. That guy doesn't exist anywhere other than where he is right now. Only because James Harden is in Philadelphia with Joel Embiid. And they look at themselves as a legitimate contender in the East. And we're now past the All-Star break where, okay, now we need to ramp it up. Only now is that the reason why you are getting a fully engaged James Harden diving for basketballs, putting the body on the line, putting the team first, giving real effort because he thinks he has a chance to win a title. No chance to win title, no effort like that. There's no chance for James Harden to win a title in the city of Houston next year. Not unless you're bringing Joel Embiid with him. So if you're telling, oh, well, you're James Harden and Jalen Green and Jabari Smith and Alpi Shangoon and whoever they take in the draft. James is going to look at those guys and be like, man, I'm better than all you clowns. I'm going to shoot. Don't worry about me getting you the ball. You get me the ball. That guy won't exist here. Money doesn't motivate James. He's got plenty of money. You know, why did he take less money for the Sixers? Because he's already made a boatload of money and he's got a $200 million shoe contract. He doesn't need money. He's got it. And the money he no longer has is just in the pockets of one of his favorite strippers. That James Harden diving and flying and hustling, and that guy would never exist on this team. So don't kid yourself. Don't live in fantasy land. Don't be a dreamer. It will not ever make sense to bring James Harden back to Houston to play for the Rockets. That ship has sailed. That bridge has burned. I don't wish Harden ill will. I'd be very happy to see him win a title in Philadelphia this year. That'd be great. Title for him, title for Daryl, title for Joe. Go win it. I don't care if the Sixers win a title because, well, you know, the Phillies didn't. The Eagles didn't. Hell, even their MLS team failed. And they literally are the city of failures right now. So, if the Sixers win the NBA title this season, I'm okay with that. But yeah, there is no reason to bring back James Harden and put him on this team to be a negative influence, because he will be a negative influence. Can't help himself. He'll be a negative influence on these young kids. What they need is a real coach who's going to have real rules. And, sorry, Steven Silas, just, he doesn't really have a whole lot of real rules. He's too soft. They need somebody who's going to be a little stricter, who's going to kick him in the fanny a little more often, who's going to hold them more accountable, and who's going to push. And I mean push like hell. Because all those guys are progressing, but they're not progressing as fast as they should be. And a lot of that is Silas's fault. They're just not progressing enough. But do not, in any way, shape, or form, think for 1 second the James Harden that you are seeing in Philadelphia right now could ever be the James Harden that would play here again. That is fantasy. One more segment to go, and I got to tell you, I have no idea how the hell this is allowed to go on right now. Next.
ESPN 97.5. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph. Get Physical RX. And by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Rocky III! Now, crazy thing about this song. This was not supposed to be the theme for Rocky III. Another One Bites the Dust by Queen was supposed to be the theme. Queen would not give them permission to use the song.
Really?
So, Eye of the Tiger became the theme. So, this song, released May 31st, 1982, wound up being the theme song for Rocky III. And, I mean, this is still one of the biggest rock songs of all time because of this movie. Now, you want to know what's great about this song being released May 31st? Rocky III was released 3 days earlier. So it was released as part of the movie before you could buy it.
That's genius.
They created a demand. Everybody went to go see the movie. The movie was huge. Everybody went to go see the movie. What is this song? They couldn't buy it for the 3 days. So it made this huge demand. Everybody wanted to go buy the song because of the movie.
Genius.
Man, I tell you, and this is not the only song Survivor ever had, but it's far and away their best song. So there is something going on in college basketball right now that is kind of crazy, considering that it involves somebody being shot and killed. So multiple Alabama players are involved here. They're the second-ranked team in the country. Brandon Miller and Jaden Bradley are still playing, despite the fact that they are essentially material witnesses and part of a murder investigation, in which case a former player, Darius Miles, and his friend, Michael Davis, are actually charged with capital murder. In the event, Miller had dropped off Miles and Davis at a sports bar in Tuscaloosa, like a student bar section, where apparently Davis was hitting on a woman whose name is Jamia Harris. He was hitting on Jamia Harris, who was there with her boyfriend and her cousin, who also was an Alabama student, and she turned him down. Davis, of course, extremely drunk and not really happy about the fact that he's being turned down. Next thing you know, there is a confrontation. Miles texts Miller. Basically, I need my gun. It's about to go down. Miller realizes, oh, he left his gun in my car when I dropped him off, and brings him the gun. The gun is then ultimately used in a murder. They're shooting. The boyfriend shooting back, and the young woman gets killed. But somehow nobody has a problem. These two guys who, you know, were bringing a weapon to a scene that was used to commit a murder. Nobody's a problem with these guys playing basketball. The NCAA, who wants to go after Jim Harbaugh because he bought a recruit a hamburger. A hamburger! And didn't remember, oh, I bought the kid a hamburger. Oh, all right, I didn't remember. I bought the kid a hamburger. Like, what'd he do, $10? No, that's a lie. That's a like, level one violation. These kids brought a loaded weapon to a volatile scene, and it was used in a murder. Nothing to see here. Please disperse. Now, Alabama law is very clear that Miller would only be convicted or charged, essentially, if he knew that Miles or Davis intended to use the gun to commit a crime. And his statement is that he didn't have any knowledge that they were going to commit a crime. So your boy's telling you, go get me my gun because, you know, we got a situation here. You know, and there's a fight going. And you thought, oh, they're not actually going to use this. He'll just take it out for show. Remember that part about me starting at center for the Rockets? Same level of believability. But apparently, prosecutors in Alabama don't want to mess the number two team in the country. So they're not going to charge this kid who... There is no way in hell you can tell me this kid brought a gun to his buddy who said, look, things are really hot. It's about to go down. Go get me my weapon. Because why else would he need it? It's about to go down. You know what? Instead of me just getting out of here and staying out of trouble, let me get my gun. Because that always works out so well. Nobody has any issue with this. I find this just unbelievable. Now, Josh, you're a young guy. You've recently been in college. You walk around college with a gun?
I certainly do not.
Did your boys walk around college with a gun?
No, I will say they did warn me of those who may or may not have a weapon on them, so we made sure to stay far away from those set individuals.
But that was like more the exception than the rule.
Absolutely.
Okay. What goes on in Alabama? Everybody's got a damn gun. And they're shooting each other in the bar. And the one guy, Davis, is so drunk, he popped off 10 shots on a busy street. Lucky he only killed one person and had no recollection of any of it because he was that drunk. Yeah, this is insanity.
I don't even, I believe I read not too long ago that his draft stock hasn't, like, as far as Brandon Miller, hasn't even been really affected by that.
More insanity. Maybe by the time, you know, they get closer to the draft, that will change. Partly based on the idea of, even if you're getting away with it this time, what dumbass stuff will you do after we give you millions of dollars? Because when you give dumbasses more money, they tend to be bigger dumbasses, not, oh, I should wise up, I have money. No, they're bigger dumbasses. They do even more stupid things thinking I could just buy my way out of it. Yeah, it's just straight up insanity that this is now the biggest story in college basketball, not the teams, not that we are getting ready to go into conference tournaments, not, you know, what the bracket is going to look like, but that you've got kids who are essentially involved in a murder playing basketball. No one cares. No legal entity gives a damn because, you know, they're the number two team in the country and they might be the number one overall seed. And we don't want to mess with that. In what world is it reasonable to think that bringing a loaded weapon and giving it to your friend who is A, drunk, B, angry, and C, in a confrontation is not, hey, common sense, this is going to go down. That he had no idea whatsoever? Right, I'm 7 feet tall. It's crazy. It's just it doesn't make a damn bit of sense.
And to make the story even louder, he proceeded to drop 41 points in his first game.
Doesn't affect him at all. Oh, you worried about me and the cops? No, 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 watch this. Bang, bang, bang. It's crazy. Who was our second ticket winner?
So, our second ticket winner, big congratulations to Mr. Scott Peter, who was actually so kind enough to offer me to come with him.
No, look at that. You got friends.
I told him I'd be producing on Sunday. So I can come.
Well, congratulations to him. We'll see you out there on Sunday night as the Roughnecks take on the Renegades. Going to do it for us for today. I want to say thanks to Hollywood Nate. I want to say thanks, Coach Peyton Pardee. My man, Josh Vance, on the other side of it. Oh, that's asymmetric risk. Ah, he's going to the game. Awesome. Very cool. Our callers, our texters, our tweeters, our twitchers. We'll see you back on Monday. Have a great weekend. H-Town!
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.